Cubicle Night Noodlings, recorded on the 17th of March, 2021. This is my corner of the internet where I talk about the fun things that tickle my nerdy nerve endings. This is the 25th Value Menu Sized Podcast. I'm back in my super cubicle, so my audio should be better, but please temper expectations. Coming up, we talk about NSYNC. No, not the band. A sync client for Google Drive and OneDrive on OpenSUSE. Fedora 33, a review from an OpenSUSE user. KDE Plasma 5.21 on OpenSUSE Tumbleweed. It's better than ever. The latest version of the versatile Commodore emulator on OpenSUSE. My OpenSUSE corner, although it sounds like it's pretty much all been OpenSUSE. And a computer history retrospective on operating systems from 1984. I'm not sure what to think of social media. Just a few short decades ago now, I started my online life and the term social media wasn't actually used. I would dial into a BBS about Commodore or Amiga stuff. Later on, I would dial into that local internet service provider and I would get involved in chat rooms, but later forums, which helped me to learn all things Linux. That was my social media. I got to know people online with a common interest. I've come to the realization I do not really know how to most effectively use any of the social media platforms, and I am at a point where I'm okay with that. Everyone was not meant for everything, and I've decided to resign myself to that fact. I would rather spend my time on things that truly make me happy and content in life. I do, however, enjoy getting feedback from real people asking real questions. I receive many messages for help and problems solving different issues with applications, for others, graphic card troubles, which ultimately ended up being a kernel NVIDIA issue. Version 5.11.6 fixed all that. The most interesting email I received, yes, I love email, was a request to write up something concerning OpenSUSE and using it in a server environment. I found this to be incredibly intriguing, and a quick search of the 370-some-odd pages on cubiclenate.com revealed to me that I have only two pages that had any mention of anything server. One, setting up MV, and two, building my AMD workstation server machine, which is still happily churning away running OpenSUSE Tumbleweed. So then I thought, and thought, I need to revive a project I abandoned due to some time constraints on my Tumbleweed Firewall Edge Device project. I have so much to learn about network architecture and setting up services that I'm going to put my nose to the grindstone and start really figuring these things out. So I'm setting my course on really pushing my knowledge base there. Sure, I could use IPFire, PFSense, or OPNSense, but they aren't OpenSUSE, and since I have an almost unhealthy obsession with the project, that's what I want to do. Although I'm not a huge fan of putting my files on somebody else's computer, like Google or Microsoft's services, I am in a situation where I still have to use it, and I may as well make using it much more pleasant. So the application, now this is not an open source application, is called NSYNC, I-N-S-Y-N-C, not N-S-Y-N-C, just in case you're going to search it. I've been using it since about 2013, when I think it was free at the time, and then they made it like a paid-for service. Now, I did recently also upgrade my subscription with them so I could include the OneDrive, because I do need that now as well. The reason I'm covering this is I was asked recently if there was a way to install NSYNC, not just from downloading the RPM, but to use the repository method for, you know, keeping it updated and so forth. So I did a little digging. I kind of read through some XML code on their site that I was able to, you know, browse into. And using the Fedora instructions on the NSYNCHQ.com website, I made some alterations to their instructions to make it work with OpenSUSE and Zipper. I did these instructions for both Leap 15.2 and Tumbleweed, but I imagine that 15.3 is going to be, you know, pretty similar. And I'm sure I could make the instructions a little bit better, you know, using some system variables and whatnot. So if you have some input on that, I'd be glad to hear it. You can send me an email, or you can leave a comment on the article I wrote on cubiclenate.com, whichever is fine. A link to that article will be in my show notes. Now, very quickly, what I do like about NSYNC is it's a very nicely done application. It's a commercial product, so you can expect a kind of commercial experience with it. It's very reliable. It's not quirky at all and really does the job nicely. I have it running on a couple machines so I can keep those two machines synchronized properly with those cloud services. If you have a need for using Google Drive or Microsoft OneDrive on your Linux machine, specifically OpenSUSE, feel free to check out my article. You'll see how I use it and maybe you can adapt it for your needs should you have to use those services. I decided to take some time and install and play with Fedora 33 to, you know, give it my biased review from an OpenSUSE user. I previously reviewed Fedora 31, so apparently, like Star Trek movies, I only visit the odd ones. Bottom line up front, Fedora with the Plasma spin is a fantastic distribution. DNF seems to be getting better and better with every release. I'm impressed with the improvements in readability using the terminal interactions. The speed of the updates is greatly improved. And truly, I am impressed with the overall performance of the system. The world of Fedora is not standing still by any means, and the last year seems to have made great strides, and I really enjoyed my time on it. Now, would I switch from OpenSUSE to Fedora? No, I wouldn't. There's some little nitinoid reasons here and there, but I could see where OpenSUSE could benefit from some of the Fedora technology. The big thing that Fedora does not have is the snapshotting capability of OpenSUSE. So as awesome as Fedora is, it truly is. It just doesn't have the same safety net that I require, that I enjoy, because I do break my system from time to time. One fun little thing I did do with it was I made it look like my OpenSUSE desktop. Since it is Plasma, I imported my Plasma Dark style and color scheme. And unless if you open up the system info viewer, you could potentially think that I was running OpenSUSE Tumbleweed as opposed to Fedora. The one thing Fedora could do better is, even though they have a Plasma spin, the way they do Firefox, it uses the GTK default file dialog, and I just don't like the file dialog. It is not a good experience for me. I prefer the Plasma default K-file dialog, which has a lot better controls. I also didn't care for that they installed Caligra by default as opposed to LibreOffice. Not a huge deal. That's a nitpick issue. Very easy to install LibreOffice. And also, there isn't anything like Yast in Fedora. Now, some people don't like Yast. I don't understand it. And it may be a crutch, but having that centralized place to go to all the system administration functions of my computer is one of my favorite features of OpenSUSE. You know, I had the Mandriva Control Center before that. There was a preferences folder on the Amiga Workbench. Now, Windows has a control center. So it's nice to have just a central place to go to change whatever you want to change about your system. And I think Yast executes that very nicely. I've been running KDE Plasma 5.21 on OpenSUSE Tumbleweed for a little while now. And I must say, it is the best Plasma. I know I've said that before with previous iterations of Plasma, but it really is better. With some applications, when there are updates or new things, you kind of get worried because are they going to take away features? Are they going to remove things? You know, the transition from Plasma 4 to Plasma 5, it took away a lot of functionality that I liked. I have workarounds for it now, or the functionality has been returned. But Plasma 5, really, especially in the past 4 years, continues to get better and better. Things like the KDE Connect, the lower and lower system resource requirements of Plasma as it progresses, it's moving in the direction that I really appreciate. One of the changes I do appreciate is the application launcher. I was not a huge fan of the application launcher previously. I've been using the application menu, and the new one has a nicer look to it. I like the layout better. However, I still prefer the application menu, which is just a very plain menu that pops up all the applications under a certain category in one shot. So to me, that is just a better workflow for me. The new system monitor is great. It has a nice snapshot view of what your system's doing, like your memory, disk usage, CPU usage, and then they have really nice graphs in there for showing like your system history, so CPU usage or network activity, memory usage, and so forth. It's nice to see well-polished functional graphs on what your system's doing. They made a lot of other little visual tweaks, little things like the red X in the corner to close a window. It's instead of being a white X that when you go over it, it turns red. It's just red all the time. And then hovering over it desaturates a little bit. It's just a little thing, but I think it is better. The big visual tweak that I appreciate is when setting up display configuration, the orientation series of icons that shows like how the monitor is oriented. Previously, like on 518, the picture they used was like kind of a mountain with a sun, I'm guessing. But if you don't really know what that is, you may not know what that means. Having just a picture of a monitor makes it much easier to understand what you're looking at. You're not guessing at all. You're orienting the monitor. So if you have a monitor like on its side, if some people I know have like vertically oriented monitors, they could be to the left or right. However your physical system is set up, you can set up as such. Or upside down. I'm not sure why you want an upside down monitor, but hey, that's an option. Breeze Twilight is now a global theme option. It just takes the Breeze Dark Plasma style with the Breeze color scheme, I think. And so it's kind of a combination of the two appearances. I think that's good for a lot of people. You keep your widgets dark, but your windows and your applications a lighter color. I can see how that might work better for some people. I still prefer the dark style, which is why I created my own OpenSUSE Breeze Dark theme. But I do see the benefits of a lighter theme, especially with some applications applications not working well with a dark theme. I really believe that Plasma Desktop is by far the best desktop experience in any operating system I've ever used. Sure, some desktops may have some features that are not on Plasma that are indeed better, but the features in aggregate on Plasma are just better. The memory usage footprint is generally light on resources, but has the capability of being heavy on features. Plasma is forward-leaning, but not so forward-leaning it leaves anyone out. It's truly a personal desktop for anyone. I would say that there are some usability features that need to be enhanced to make new users more comfortable, but once that initial bump is traversed, it is pretty much smooth sailing. At least that's my experience with the last few people that I've helped navigate the initial winds of Plasma. And Plasma on Tumbleweed continues to be a fantastic experience, and I may even say the best Plasma experience on Linux today. I make no bones about the fact that I do enjoy the Commodore 64. I've done quite a few things with it. I chatted on IRC with the Commodore 64. I got the C64 Maxi, more on that on a later date. But I also like to emulate Commodore 64 in Linux. And the best emulator experience I've had with the Commodore 64 has been on the Versatile Commodore Emulator, or also called VICE. Version 3.5 came out a few months ago, and the version built for OpenSUSE is by far the best experience I've had on Linux. There's a flat pack you can install, and there's also a snap, but the OpenSUSE version is a bit more up to date and seems to have fewer issues of I'll just say strange behavior. What's new for VICE version 3.5 is it's entirely on the GTK3 toolkit. So it looks really nice, especially if you're running in Plasma. The theme integration works very well. Mapping for the C64 joystick has been added, so three buttons instead of just the one. The emulator's timing is now directly driven by the host system audio device. I know with previous versions, I had issues with Pulse Audio and VICE, but I can say for certain this is no longer an issue. There are numerous other fixes and improvements. You can check out that list. I have that linked in my show notes. Some other interesting user interface improvements. Now, this may have been there and I just didn't notice before, but you can mess with the CPU and FPS tweaks. Frames per second tweaks, they're easily accessible. So what makes that fun is you can essentially play a game that was meant for PAL, but speed it up just a little bit so it feels more like the NTSC version of the Commodore 64. It's a little thing. It's really not, I don't see a lot of people doing that, but for nostalgia's sake, the slightly faster speed makes it feel more like I remember. If you haven't kicked the tires of VICE recently, I highly recommend downloading version 3.5 and giving it another try. The GUI is better, the graphic user interface is better, the sound and video is better, the system controls are better, and based on the changelog, the underpinnings are better. I think you will be pleasantly surprised on the refreshed experience. For my OpenSUSE corner, I decided I would move my OpenSUSE smiles to this section. And something that made me smile recently was this Arduino-controlled ambient light chameleon. It's just like a blathering I made a little while ago. One of the greatest things about the information age is being able to see the seemingly endless creativity of the world's makers, programmers, and artists. Even cooler is when these different passions and disciplines come together to create something truly fun and exciting. There are countless examples out there. You can find them. They're easily accessible to see what people have done. But one in particular that really just brought a huge smile to my face was this chameleon that somebody made. They put these LEDs in it. There's a little video of it changing colors and whatnot. But they made a lamp out of it, almost like a mood light, maybe. But it kind of goes through just the rainbow of colors back and forth. They built it using a 3D printing and some electronics skills and abilities. And I can very much imagine it sitting next to my couch in the living room, just very calmly changing colors either throughout the day to match like the outdoor light, to match the warmth of the outdoor light, or maybe just, you know, doing an LED light dance. Either way, it's a very cool project. It makes me think OpenSUSE and would be a fun project to do, you know, amongst the other things that I like to do. So you can check that out. I have a link to that in my show notes. The Arduino controlled ambient light chameleon. OpenSUSE has been known for years as an amazing, vast, and buzzing community. But after many discussions with the many linguistic groups that compose the OpenSUSE mosaic, it has been felt that more could be done to facilitate communication and exchanges. So what the OpenSUSE community feels to make the communities special is to improve the sharing of knowledge and emotions and stories. So it's a nice idea, but how they're going to implement it is news.opensuse.org, news.oo, will have community news translated in the foremost spoken languages within the community. So Indonesian, Spanish, Portuguese, in Russian. And this is only beginning. If you'd like to get in touch and offer your translation services, please do so. There's going to be a new community newsletter to feature amazing individuals from the community, putting a spotlight on what they do and how they do it in interviews or self-coverage, share useful tutorials and guides on how to use OpenSUSE, and feature some interesting packages that users may love, and expose places in the community where your interests and skills would be best put to use. And there's some other things as well, so check that out. It's a call to all contributors, especially those that have the ability to do some translating. The OpenSUSE project is one of about 200 mentoring organizations selected for this year's Google Summer of Code. The OpenSUSE project has participated in several Google Summers of Code events since 2006, and the project's mentors have helped more than 60 students become familiar with the open source software development. The OpenSUSE website dedicated to GSOC offers several projects for students. Projects are available for software testing with OpenQA, artificial intelligence development with PB, and configurations and infrastructure management through the Uni project. Some of the projects listed with the OpenSUSE organization within the Google Summer of Code program work with Kubernetes like the Carrier project and Rancher. Link to the full article is in the show notes. There's a great article on news.opensuse.org about playing along with NF tables. I cannot intelligently speak about IP tables or NF tables, and reading through the entire article, I realized I don't know enough about IP tables or NF tables. It's a very interesting article, so if you are into firewall science or playing with firewalls, check out the article. It's very informative. It talks about the FirewallD system, which I guess does both IP tables and NF tables. So if you're into that, please check it out. One of these days, I'll actually learn and understand it, but I just can't give you a really good assessment. Link to the article is in my show notes. For my tumbleweed roundup, Snapshot 2021-0302 is a stable 93. Snapshot 2021-0302 is a stable 93. 0305 is a moderate 86. My application issues with appearance and some are broken. None that I seem to be using at this time. 0306 had a moderate score of 84. Issues with SE Linux, issues with Systemd, Network Manager, and NSCD where NF mounts were failing. Hundreds of other weird SysV convert warnings during upgrade. 0307 has a moderate score of 78. That dropped from a pending stable 91. There are various failures with various applications and bits. 0311 has a pending unstable of 69. Issues with Snapper, WickedD, SystemD, and a few other things, all of which don't seem to be affecting me. 0312 has a pending moderate of 86. HP LIP, the HP device settings utility, seems to be failing. World of Padman doesn't launch. It's also known as WOP. It's a colorful, cartoon-esque shooter based on the fictional universe of Padman, which, now that I know that it failed, which I never would have known about had it not shown up as an issue with the snapshot. So I'm glad it was an issue. Snapshot 0315 has a pending stable of 93, and Snapshot 0316 has a pending stable of 95. If you'd like to check out those reviews, I have a link to all of that in my show notes. For my computer history retrospective, this is my segment where I like to look back in time and see how the world of technology has advanced and how things have stayed the same. I find we often forget how far we've come and how good we have it now, while not always remembering how we got here. Having some historical perspective on computers and technology can help to drive some appreciation for what we have today. I really enjoy this episode from Computer Chronicles on operating systems from 1984. At the time, one of the major operating systems was CPM, created by Gary Kildall, and also co-host of the Computer Chronicles. This episode had a great breakdown of the basics of what an operating system does on the small and mainframe type systems. Largely today, everything is still pretty much true. Some of the devices have changed, and we now put new pressures on our technology, but operating systems still provide the same basic services today for personal computers, but much of what was done on the mainframes in the 80s can be performed on a laptop or desktop computer today. So today's operating systems do manage resources and maximize system performance, which wasn't really done so much when you had an 8 to 16 megahertz system. I mean, it did happen, but just it wasn't as big of a pressure. The single best quote of the episode was by Herb Lechner.
Well, Stuart, I guess operating systems are most exciting when they don't work, and that you don't want to have happen.
I have a link to the full video. Very interesting stuff. There's a part where Herb Lechner talks about the seven functions of an operating system as of 1984. And this is kind of an amalgamation of the mainframe or mini computer systems, as well as microcomputer systems, but really more for larger systems. And those were to, one, establish interfaces, two, to permit multiple users to use it, so like in a Unix-type system environment, to manage data files, handle input and output of data, error recovery, system accounting, and maintenance accounting, because parts would wear out and so forth. And we do have, you know, that today. We got the smart daemon that keeps track of drives and lets you know that they're failing before they actually fail. I particularly enjoyed the Unix segment. The multitasking capabilities of Unix and Xenix are much like what we enjoy here on Linux today. And like Linux today, it has that do-it-yourself nature to it. Interestingly, Unix sounds much like what Linux is today, many parts from which you pick and choose to fit your specific use case on your computer. Most people believe an operating system should be transparent and to not bother the user. This seems to be the desire in 1984 as it is today. An operating system is the foundation for which I'm able to accomplish the tasks that I choose. Today, the scope of operating systems has changed a lot since the 8-bit days. Operating systems now have to be able to scale themselves to the hardware appropriately and enable users in ways that are much more complicated than 40 years ago. I also have a really good article I'm going to link to about Unix and Linux through history and can be found on Front Page Linux. It's a very well written, fantastic tour of operating systems by Eric Londo that you should absolutely check out. He covers more than just Unix and Linux. You know, there's BSD, which, you know, is Unix, but also some Windows history as well and how it all relates. It's a real fun travel through time to see how the desktop has changed and how things have evolved, and I really appreciate the completeness of it. It really should be a hardback book, and Eric really could make some money selling it, but instead he gave it to us through Front Page Linux, so check that out. A link is in the show notes. Thank you for taking the time to listen to this bit of nerdy nonsense. If you have any corrections, addendums, some comments, feel free to send me one of those fancy electronic messages to me@cubiclenate.com. For more of my nonsense, visit cubiclenate.com and use any of the methods you like on that contact page. I'll get to it as quickly as I can. If you'd like more from me in the world of podcasts, visit dlnextend.com. That's dlnxtend.com, where I have a chat with my two superb co-hosts, Wendy and Matt, about the wonders and excitement of the Linux and open source world. Until next time, see yas. Where did that go? Nope. Yes.